everyone is a star child, made of stardust and the infinite potential of the universe. This extraordinary, fearless something in each of us clamors for freedom from the bonds of fear, conformity, and an ordinary life. Welcome to Dr. Durr's Living in the Sweet Spot, where practical tools and solutions from the intersection of mind-body medicine, science, and spiritual well-being awaken and empower you to live out your infinite potential, to live life in the sweet spot. A lot of times, men wear a mask because it doesn't feel comfortable or emotionally safe to fully be themselves, including expressing their emotions. So in this episode, Manhood Matters, the impact of masculinity on men's health, we're going to delve into the profound effects that traditional notions of manhood and masculinity have on men's health and well-being, how those expectations and those cultural norms can contribute to mental health challenges, physical health risk, and the overall quality of life for men. So joining me today for that conversation is my guest, Dr. Jimmy Henry. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me on, Dr. Bellin. I appreciate this platform opportunity to talk about men's health.
Well, I'm so glad to have you here because this has been percolating with me for a while because I have what I call a village of menfolk. And, you know, I often think of, we have these conversations about what it means to be a man, how they think, how they feel, how what I call how they move in the world. And especially so for African-American men in terms of what that looks like and the expression of emotion or not. But I know it's true that for men in general, there's this idea of what men look, how they're supposed to behave, you know, what's acceptable, what's not, and how they can be not only challenged, but really kind of put down for those different expressions of manhood. But again, then I wanted to take a look at, so how does that impact, you know, their health, their physical health and their mental health?
Right. So, you know, there's a lot that kind of goes into answering that, right? You know, what is manhood, you know, really, you know, men or being a man is really having a XY, right? You're born a male, but essentially becoming a man is a maturity issue. It's really growing into physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually into who you are as a man. Now, we have these traditional concepts of what manhood should look like, and sometimes it's opposing what the modern ideologies of manhood really are. But either way, men can feel somewhat restricted in how to express themselves as comprehensive men. And that can have mental effects and physical effects as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the thing that I love about having this conversation is because, you know, by delving into this topic, you know, we're going to take a look at how do you redefine masculinity so that it can lead to, you know, healthier, more fulfilling lives and challenging those stereotypes and promoting a more balanced, holistic approach to men's health. So before we get into that some more, let me share with the audience who Dr. Jimmy Henry is. So you trained in physical medicine and rehabilitation and did a fellowship in interventional pain management. And you've been a physician for nearly 20 years. Then you made a transition, become a board certified naturopathic doctor, a certified holistic health practitioner, and a master certified professional coach with an expertise in health and wellness coaching, life and executive coaching. And then you're also a keynote speaker. And I love the fact that you are passionate about men's health and utilizing mental fitness as a tool in your coaching practice in order to help men improve in their relationships, performance, and well-being. So, you know, of course, the thing that I also think is, you know, really interesting about you is, you know, you were in, or should say, you know, in and practicing, you know, traditional Western medicine, which is allopathic medicine.
Right.
And then you made this pivot to naturopathic medicine. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So, you know, being in healthcare for nearly 20 years, right, taking care of other people, honestly, I didn't take care of myself the best that I should have, right? And I think we often fall into that trap of medicine about not putting ourselves first. And though while I was practicing and taking care of patients, building a practice, running a practice, having employees, I actually developed some health issues myself. I became hypertensive. I was overweight. So I was dealing with all these issues related to my actual stress. And then I began to kind of go on this wellness journey when I unfortunately lost a loved one. My cousin, who was only 34 years old, she passed away of breast cancer. No prior history, no family history, perfectly healthy. And that kind of led me down this path. Okay, how can I be the best version of myself and trying to avoid anything I can really, you know, prevent? But it was hard to do while trying to run a practice. So fast forward 2020, you know, we have COVID, you know, stressful. We have George Floyd, stressful. Mm-hmm. I was going through some personal issues as well. And just kind of the culmination of things caused me to just push the pause and just take a step back. And when I took that time away, I realized actually how burnt out I actually was. I was ignoring all these physical signs and symptoms, just keep going forward. Meanwhile, it was costing me a great deal. Health-wise.
Yeah, because so, physician burnout is pretty common, actually.
It is. It's extremely, extremely common. And actually, the funny thing is, many physicians, I believe, underreport how burnout they actually are. Mm-hmm. And so me, I wasn't voicing my issues to anyone. So I took that time away to focus on, you know, my faith, therapy for my mental health, going to the gym, nutrition, just really taking care of myself. And then when I became certified as a holistic practitioner and a coach, now I use what I learned there to help other people, especially men, prevent some of the things that I was dealing with and give them a space where they can actually express themselves in a very holistic way. So, yeah.
You know, I think the thing that, and I, you know, I'm being honest, I just, part of me just in very simple terms, I'm just kind of going, the fact that we think that we, as physicians or as anyone who takes care of other people, that we think that we can pour from an empty cup, it's just crazy as hell.
It's nonsensical, right? And you know, the funny thing is when we're studying and we're learning all these signs and symptoms of our patients, right? Mm-hmm. How to listen to their heart and lungs and look at their skin and their eyes and all these things we're taught to look at, but we never look at it for ourselves. We in fact are taught to ignore it and push through it. Mm-hmm. And that really is a disservice for us because we're not practicing what we're preaching. And this disconnect really affects, I believe, the way that we practice.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that, you know, again, on balance, it's one thing to say in case of, you know, urgent or emergent situations that we have to put maybe in terms of putting ourselves first to the side. But the problem is, as you're talking about, we're conditioned as physicians to do that consistently, as opposed to, again, looking at, at things from a place of, again, I can't pour from an empty cup. So right. I just like to remind people, do you periodically put gas in your gas tank? The answer is yes, unless you want to run out of gas. So, yes, right. You know, it's not about being selfish. It's about taking care of yourself so that you can then take care of others. Or as the flight attendants say, you know, should the cabin lose air pressure, the oxygen mask will drop from the ceiling. If you are traveling with someone, put your mask on first, Why? Because who are you going to help if you passed out of debt?
Absolutely.
So I think, you know, that, so that I think is a good segue, actually.
Mm-hmm. It is.
To getting into this issue of, you know, manhood and masculinity and, you know, and how that impacts health. Because again, there's, you know, what we're conditioned or, you know, trained to think and be and do versus what's really, you know, working for us. Mm-hmm. So can you explain how those traditional concepts of manhood and masculinity influence both mental and physical health for men?
Sure. You know, and so I believe there is a lot of purpose in traditional masculinity. You know, traditional gender roles, I think, have a place because it provides some order and some structure. You know, men and women were equal, but we're not the same, right? We're meant to complement each other. But unfortunately, you know, the narrative of what it means to be a traditional man, the extreme version of that has been used to identify what all manhood should be, right? Without any consideration for individual needs or really wants. So what happens
just to be clear, yeah. So what are we talking about when we're talking about traditional ideas of manhood?
Right. So, you know, all men should be A, B, C, X, Y, D. So, you know, you should have these attributes of masculinity that are, you know, ambition, passion, leadership, strength, lack of emotion, you know, all these things that we personify as being part of what manhood is or should be can be quite restrictive, right? And actually prevent men from expressing themselves fully in their manhood, right? We are we don't fit neatly into a box, and I know society likes it when you can neatly fit us into a box, but that same box it tries to fit men into actually becomes a prison, right? It imprisons us from expressing our emotions, and if that persists, that same box could be a coffin, right? It can actually cause us to feel dead in our own skin and lead to premature death. Men have
hold on for a second. Yeah. Let's take that in.
Yeah.
If you just say, can you repeat that for the folks that in the back of the church that just came in?
Yeah, yeah. Right. Right. That same box they try to fit us in, right, can actually become our own coffin. You know, we can feel dead in our own skin, but also lead to premature death.
So I think to your point, and obviously you expressed in such a powerful yet poignant way, is the fact that we are these whole, complete, complex beings with a variety of ways in expressing our beingness. And when we feel the necessity out of fear and for self-preservation to conform to a limited idea about who we are, that may serve us in some instances, but not in every instance and not all the time. So the very thing that is our, as you said, the very thing that is our stronghold can then become our prison, or in your terms, our
coffin. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And like you said, powerful. Yeah, no, thank you. And there's a balance to everything. But when you use it as the extreme form of it to describe the whole, that's problematic. And that is just destructive, really. You know, there's this concept that all men are physically strong. In reality, some men may not be physically strong. And does that make them any less of a man? Right? Because they can't bench 225 20 times? No, right?
Of course not.
And yeah.
I mean, of course they're not less than a man, right?
Right.
And also, again, just because if you're quote unquote not the manly man, mm-hmm. and you're not aggressive and overly, you know, assertive. And so you have a kind of an easier, maybe I'm hesitant to use the word softer, but yeah, but a less assertive, let's call it that, a less assertive demeanor, that doesn't make you less of a man either.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there are you know, hard skills, there are soft skills. I think it's important to be balanced in both, right? And then so a man who's trying to live up to these expectations that are unjustly put upon them, they may feel rejected by the society that they live in. And then they may themselves reject who they are because they don't fit into this box.
Mm-hmm. So how do those, you know, I guess misconceptions about masculinity and what it means to be a man, how does that negatively impact men's health specifically?
Yeah. So one way is that men tend to seek health care less than women. And I believe that's in part due to these misconceptions about what masculinity is. You know, wanting to always be strong and or appear strong, men oftentimes have internalized that, meaning they don't want to appear weak. And that pride, you know, can have men believing nothing could ever be wrong with them, right? You know, mm-hmm. believing that their youth lasts, you know, forever, that they're invincible, indestructible. We know that that's not true, right? But also what men may be dealing with is an element of fear, meaning they may want to avoid a potential issue. And they may feel like, well, if I don't know it, or what I don't know can hurt me. When in fact, the very thing that you don't know can hurt you, even kill you, right? Mm-hmm. And I mentioned that men have a shorter life expectancy than women by, on average, about 7 years across cultures. And I really believe in part is due to these misconceptions and internalized stress that men deal with that lead to our demise prematurely.
So, you know, one of the things that I've been told, and you certainly speak about it, but I want to speak about it directly, is one of the reasons, well, put like this, that men don't ask for help because it's perceived in that they're being weak. So then if you connect that to healthcare, both mental and physical, then to seek help for their mental and physical health then could be a sign of weakness. Am I
correct
making that correlation?
Correct. That's okay. That's very much the case, when in actuality, not seeking help may lead to an illness that then will actually make you weak, right? There's actually wisdom and strength in seeking help for a problem, not avoiding the problem altogether.
So, and here's how I try to frame it. Nobody, in terms of whether you're man or woman, no one knows how to do everything. Right. And because we don't know how to do everything, then you do seek professional assistance, right? If you don't know how to fix your plumbing, you call a plumber. Mm-hmm. Your roof is leaking, you get a roofer. And you know, if you want some landscaping or a house built, you're gonna get an architectural landscaper or an architect that builds houses. So to me, it's important to just think about the truth is, if we can ask for help to do these other things, right? I don't know how to fix the car. Mm-hmm. Cars today, you know, there's like rolling computers, really. Right. Then you got to take it to a mechanic. So, you know, I ask people to think about it in that kind of basic truth of getting help for other things. So be okay with asking for help with you, when you don't know how to help yourself, both with the mental health and physical health. So again, specifically, what kinds of illnesses are we talking about that show up in men because of their, you know, their issues in terms of, you know, the stresses of being men, and just, again, not seeking help? What specific health?
No, for sure. So some of the leading causes of death are actually preventable causes of death, right? Cardiovascular disease, so heart disease, hypertension, high blood pressure, diabetes, cancer. Just off the top, those are the leading causes of death, and they're all potentially preventable. Lifestyle has a lot to do with our health, and internalized stress has a lot to do with our health. Stress has this cascade that can lead to inflammation and pain and increased blood sugar and narrowing of your arteries, et cetera, et cetera. So if we don't manage the primary culprit, which is stress, and then on top of that, don't seek help when we feel like we're not ourselves, then it becomes a chronic issue, which has devastating consequences. And when men think about, taking care of their family and providing for their family, you can't provide if you're not here. You're of no service to your family, not just financially, but emotionally, right?
Okay,
Mentally, spiritually.
I was gonna say, so say that again. You
Yeah.
can't do what if you're not what?
You can't provide for your family if you're not here, right? You're financially, mentally, physically, emotionally, your family needs you here. And I think it's the onus is really on men to be accountable to ourselves. There are a lot of factors that go into us not feeling comfortable or not willing to seek out help. But we're here to increase the awareness about this issue and try to break down those barriers so that men feel more comfortable. It's vitally important that we take care of ourselves.
Right. So you can't provide and you can't protect when you are pouring from an empty cup. Right. If I tell folks, if you laid out in a hospital bed somebody somewhere, who are you going to provide for and take care of? So I think those are some wonderful points. And I tell you what, let's take a break. Then we come back and then we'll pick up on this.
Sounds good.
Heaven Abounds in You takes you on an inward journey of discovery that dramatically transforms your outward experience of life. Discover the power of belief. Utilize it in connection with science to create a vision of meaning and purpose that pulls you forward. Let go of the meager me to discover the magnificent me. Let go of your painful past and live life free from fear, worry, and stagnation. Experience an abundant universe as you powerfully create happiness, relationships, health, and limitless opportunities. When you heal your mind, all things are possible. Hey there, Dr. Balin A. Durr here with my guest, Dr. Jimmy Henry, and we're talking about Manhood Matters, the impact of masculinity on men's health. And before the break, you were talking about some of the specific impacts that physical impacts on health that men experience. And so one of the things that and you talked about these, but I also think it's important for people to understand how something works so then they can make better use of it. So one of the things about when we're stressed is that that has chemicals associated with it. And then those chemicals impact the body. It's one thing if it's for a short time, few minutes, 10 minutes, if it's the, cars coming, I don't want to get hit kind of thing. But to be under chronic stress, where it's just constant, 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 and those chemicals really don't have a way to recede completely, right? So that you can go into that rest and restoration mode, then that those chemicals are going to damage the body. They're also going to, as you talked about, they're going to dysregulate certain other hormones and chemicals, like dysregulate control of the blood sugar, dysregulate control of our blood pressure. So there are those aspects of it which is why, you know, chronic stress is difficult. And so, of course, especially when you're talking about, you know, being an African-American man or being Latinx or being someone else of color, then there's the additional stressors that you all experience because of those dynamics and that constant stress that also impact your health. Now, the other part to that is that, you know, I wanted to get into also some of the mental health aspects, because we didn't talk about that. I like to tell folks, your brain is not in a separate container from the rest of your body.
Right.
So, and frankly, the brain is running everything. So if it's impaired some way, right, something about the way we think, feel, what we do, or how the body functions is going to be, it's going to be impaired. It's going to glitch. So obviously there's also, you know, so then we're talking about, if you could speak to, you know, there's the instance, then you've got depression and you've got anxiety, we've got addictions, we got from overdoses.
Right.
Do you want to speak about that at all?
Yeah. That's a great way to, you know, explain it, right? Stress serves a purpose for a short period of time, but it's the chronic stress that has the negative problems. Kind of like pain, you know, like if you were to put your hand on a hot stove, it's good that you perceive the pain to remove your hand from the hot stove. But if you don't and leave it there chronically, right, you're going to have second, third degree burns. So with mental health, especially when we feel stress, it can lead to certain emotions, right? And those emotions could be, you know, anger, it could be frustration, sadness, what have you. These emotions should be expressed in a healthy manner. The best way to do that is to speak them, right? Talk to someone that you trust, a loved one, someone objective, a therapist, a coach, what have you. When we don't process, you know, or think about the way that we feel and release it, then it usually will lead to some other behaviors, right? So however we don't express it verbally, it maybe end up expressed, whether it's through alcohol use, drug use, promiscuity, overworking, right? Picking up overtime shifts over and over again so you don't have to process your emotions and kind of putting your gratification in financial gain. Meanwhile, you're unfulfilled in what you're doing, you know.
And let's not forget domestic violence.
Oh, yes, right? So anger, unfortunately, that is a real thing. Men are oftentimes perpetrators, but even sometimes victims of domestic violence, sometimes for the same reason. You know, you may put yourself in situations that you really shouldn't be in because you're not processing your emotions properly.
Yeah. So it's, again, you make a very, you know, valid point when you say that how we feel, if it's not dealt with, if it's not managed, resolved, healed, released, because so many people have also suffered, you know, suffered from trauma. At least 70% of people in the U.S. have experienced some kind of trauma. And so whatever is what's in us is what's coming out of us. You know, I tell folks, think of it like this, right? I've got water in this glass, and there's also the amount of water I have in the glass. So wherever I move the glass, the water goes with the glass because that's what's in it. So if I'm going to not heal it, then it goes with me wherever I go. And then when I interact with people and they hit my trigger, guess what's coming out, right?
Right,
it's not going to be, in that case, there's water in the glass. So it's not going to be, you know, lemonade or milk or juice or champagne or wine. It's not going to be anything else except what's in it. So again, those feelings come out and then they impact, you know, our relationships, and they impact, like you said, our work performance. They impact, and they're, you know, the truth of the matter, of course, they're ways that we've learned how to cope with whatever we're experiencing. but they may not always be ways that serve us, right? So we want to, and you've mentioned some ways to learn about how to heal, how to process, how to release those emotions, so we're not bound up. And I say actually stuck living in the memory of the past, living from a past moment in time based upon a previous experience that emotionally we're still tied to. And then we continue to recreate over and over again until we do that healing work.
No, for sure. You know, I speak to quite a few executive type men, and they have a lot of stresses at work that they oftentimes bring home, right? And then they're kind of leaking on their family members in ways that they really shouldn't. So it really matters, you know, is your cup, you know, repaired? And it matters what's inside your cup. So, you know, pouring into yourself in a very healthy way, you know, the thing that you consume, that you digest, you know, read, look at, who you listen to, that all matters to affect what's inside of your cup.
Okay, so to me, one of the big questions is, so then in what ways does manhood, masculinity need to be redefined so that the full expressions are acceptable, not threatening, meaning or not putting men at risk of being harmed? And so basically that it's okay to express the full range of one's humanity, including being vulnerable.
Absolutely. Right. So men are, like you said, we're comprehensive, we're complex beings. We're not a monolith. We're not all the same. But I think it's important to really define masculinity on your own terms, right? Not base your existence on external expectations. The secret is, you know, with the men that I talk to, they feel like they're trying to live up to something that doesn't really exist. And they never created this idea of what this perfect manly man should be.
Right. But let's with the caveat that it needs to be healthy. Right.
Absolutely.
And again, you know, having conversations with the men folk in my village, sometimes their definitions and defining it for themselves are based upon what they see and what they experienced. Mm-hmm. So if some instances, you know, being a man meant, you know, getting the most beautiful woman that you could, or getting the most women. So we don't want to just define it, quote unquote,
right, in a healthy manner. Correct.
We want to make sure that it's based on something that's healthy, both for the man, but also for the family and for the, you know, the community and the society.
Absolutely. And I think one way to do that is to really, you know, the way that we feel and we think affects the way that we live. So tapping into, you kind of mentioned this, you know, if you take your car to the shop, why not go to the doctor to get checked out? Why not go to the therapist? You know, why not have somebody look under the hood of your brain and see, like, what's going on? How are you thinking? How are you processing things? There was a...
So, you know, I just want to ask you this. Yeah. So, and I know you don't speak for all men, but I'm just going to ask. In your experience, how do they tend to think of a therapist? I mean, what do they think a therapist is? What do they think a therapist does? What's going on, other than the fact I'm weak for seeking help? How do they perceive that?
Right. So I think the perception is that mental health is separate from physical health. Like it's some esoteric kind of a woo-woo kind of a thing that doesn't really pertain to them. So I think it's not the therapist per se, but that it's just not an issue for them. And if it were an issue, then they'd be weak for having that issue, right? However,
so part of, to me, when you say that, what I immediately think of is what my core message is that your body can't live without a brain.
Absolutely.
And that education, that information, that understanding is something that is important for everyone to come to that realization. And we know it on some level, right? We know that if you own machines and you brain dead, that you're done.
Uh-huh.
We know that on some level. But I think in a very what's missing is that knowledge and the acceptance of that truth in a very conscious way, right? So
right.
If I'm accepting that truth in a conscious way, then I'm immediately would understand how important it is for me to take care of my brain and my brain health, because without it, something about me is going to malfunction in terms of my own functioning, my own health, my own behavior, right? It's going right. to malfunction if something's wrong, if my brain is malfunctioning or if my thoughts are excessively negative. And so I think that's also the shift that needs to occur, so that again, there's not this disconnect, like you said, this kind of this woo-woo, esoteric, ethereal sense.
It's real.
Yeah. Not only is this real, but it's critical. Your brain is a vital organ, like Absolutely. Your heart, like your lungs, like your kidneys, right? Like your liver.
Absolutely.
Without it, your body is done.
No, there's a lot of re-education that needs to happen. I'm glad that this conversation will help educate people and make them more aware of the actual issue. Another thing I think for men especially is trust. And trust allows men to be vulnerable. And I think it's hard for them to be vulnerable with someone that they don't trust and or don't know yet, such as a therapist or a coach. So that takes time, because I've seen the best transformations with men when they feel vulnerable. Like they can trust you enough to tell you anything. And you have to really create a safe space for them to do that. Because think about it, from their perspective, now they're putting their heart essentially on a platter in your hand and trusting you with it. And if you break that trust, it really can damage the kind of treatment that they receive, the results that they're seeking, but also prevent them from sharing again in the future. So it's a very important thing to not only be encouraging them to be vulnerable, but actually be trustworthy enough to receive that vulnerability and handle it with such care that encourage them to keep doing it over and over.
Well, I also, when I hear you say that, I also think about how important that message is for significant others, girlfriends, boyfriends, spouses. But also, to be honest with you, especially as a child and adolescent psychiatrist, even for parents, you know, dealing with their boys, dealing with their girls, true. But I think that men's heart are so seemingly, when I say so much more vulnerable, I think it's seemingly women seem to recover more easily from, you know, emotional hurts.
Right. Where
men are like, I'm doing that one or two times and I'm not doing that anymore. That whole thing, I don't, you know, that emotional pain is so potentially devastating for them that they are unwilling to experience that again. Therefore, as you brilliantly pointed out, that lack of trust, then it permeates every relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So the relationship with the doctors, the relationships with a therapist, the relationships again with the significant other or spouses, you know, or in their professional environments. So, you know, so how do we though then create in terms of creating that safe space
right.
to be vulnerable? But I guess, but more importantly, I think how do men create that for themselves, so then that they could have, you know, better health and well-being for themselves? Because here's the truth of the matter: you and I both know,
yeah,
we cannot always rely upon other people to do things for us, including creating safe spaces or the safety for us to demonstrate the fullness of our humanity. We can't always depend on somebody else to do that. So how do I create that for myself? So, you know, or how does a man create that for himself so he can have, you know, better health and well-being?
Right. I always say, you know, while you're waiting for systems to change, you know, control what you can control within your own life, community, household, what have you. So long story short, men need to be accountable to other men. I think it's important for men to create.
Come on, teach. Teach today, Dr. Jimmy, teach.
Right. So where men create spaces for other men to actually speak. And also, men hold other men accountable when they see certain behaviors or actions that they know are not healthy. Instead, sometimes we would encourage some of these behaviors, right? As in the kind of womanizing that you mentioned before. Instead of asking what's going on with his brother, that he would use this as his therapeutic release, what is he not processing in a healthy way? So men need to create those spaces.
I think if you want to look at those kind of behaviors, is this serving me or not? Right? Is it healthy or unhealthy? Is it getting me the results that I want? But also more important, just as equally as important, why am I doing this to meet what need?
Right.
And again, is it working or is it not working? Is it healthy or is it unhealthy? Is it serving me and my family and the community or not?
Right.
What need am I trying to meet?
Right.
And is it a healthy way to do it?
So here's the thing. In the short term, some men feel that it does serve them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the problem, right? So they get this instant kind of dopamine action with whatever the activity is, and they feel like that's serving
pleasure.
Them. Pleasure.
Right? That's
pleasure,
what dopamine right? does, pleasure and motivation. Pleasure.
But then in the long term, it's actually leading to their downfall. And there's so many men that wish they wouldn't have done these things for years upon years because it really breaks them down. You're giving of yourself in a very unhealthy way through these behaviors that in the long term don't serve you at all. And women have, you mentioned that women kind of recover from this heartbreak easier, I think because they practice putting themselves out there. You actually have to practice being vulnerable to build this kind of, I don't say callous, but be somewhat resilient to someone not handling you well. And then also women verbalize much more than men. And they do that from a young age. So by the time men are adults, they're decades behind women in terms of communicating, voicing their needs and their concerns. Sometimes we focus on what we want, like visually, instead of really reflecting on what do we need in this space and this time. And I just want to encourage men to have more awareness about this issue and then be introspective about what your wants, your needs and desires are for where you want to go in life.
Say, wow, Dr. Jimmy, you know, I'm just loving what you're saying here today in this conversation. I think it's so meaningful, impactful. And let's go ahead and take a break and we'll come right back and we're going to pick up this conversation. Abounds in you, enlightens, uplifts, inspires, and invites you to live a life that's engaged, joyous, and limitless, the sweet spot of life. Take this journey in oneness. We are and have all that God, the infinite creative source of the universe, is. You are infinite potentiality, and the kingdom of heaven is within you. Heaven abounds in you. Hey there, Dr. Balan A. Durr, the host of Dr. Durr's Living in the Sweet Spot, and joining me today for this wonderful conversation is Dr. Jimmy Henry, where we're talking about manhood matters, the impact of masculinity on men's health. So, Dr. Jimmy Henry, you are just sharing some amazing wisdom during this conversation. And before we went to the break, the insights that you share about, you know, men's thinking and their hearts and what things we can start to do to address and what things men can do also to address their own, you know, concepts of manhood and masculinity and its impact upon health. So I was just going to say, if you could just briefly give us the summary about what men can do, or maybe a brief summary, and then we're going to get into what healthcare providers can do in order to create better men's health support.
Absolutely. So I believe that men can redefine masculinity on their own terms in a healthy way, right? And men can also create safe spaces for other men to express themselves, to be vulnerable, to be transparent. But in doing so, hold each other accountable, right, to our behaviors, our thoughts, and our actions. And in that way, we can create this momentum moving forward, where men feel comfortable sharing, expressing themselves in a healthy manner, in a place that they feel comfortable doing so, with people who they know that they trust and who actually care about their hearts.
Yes, and I think the other thing too that we're both saying is that we, in terms of men, need to give themselves permission to that it's okay to be vulnerable, to be emotional, because that's the fullness of your humanity. Now, what you also have to do, though, is, you know, probably check out and vet the person that you're interacting with to see, is this somebody that's safe to do that with, mm-hmm. right? Just like you don't hand the keys to your car to a 7-year-old.
Right.
Because they're going to tear it up. Right. Then the same thing is true with other people, right? So you want to check them out and make sure that they're responsible enough to handle you, right? To handle your heart. So, and then the same thing in terms of some same principle could then be applied to folks in healthcare. So again, the question becomes, you know, what advice would you give healthcare providers to better support men's health by addressing those issues that are related to masculinity and manhood?
Right. So I think, first of all, people really don't care about how much you know until they know how much you care. So while we may be educated as providers, we need to really get our feet on the ground and to do some of the legwork to get into the communities that we're trying to actually serve. So there is a program called the African Male Wellness Agency. So they do programs around the country that promote physical and mental health. And doctors should get involved in things like that. Anything that can help you get a greater understanding of where men are at in their personal lives, professional lives, that you may not have time to do in an exam room, really gives you an opportunity to build a relationship with the people that you're trying to serve.
Okay, great. That's great. And so what can they do when men come in, you know, come in
right.
their office?
Yeah. So I think really just listen, not just with words, but with body language, right? You really have to observe men when they come in, because again, they may not be forthcoming immediately with all that you want to hear. So when you ask, how are you doing? And they give you, you know, one or two words, don't just stop the conversation there. You know, you can ask, how's home life going? How's your work life going? How's your performance? You know, what hobbies do you have? What type of things do you enjoy? Who do you surround yourself with? Right. These are more questions a healthcare provider can ask to get a sense of the whole well-being of the man that they're interacting with. And I think that genuine concern lets them trust you more, because mm-hmm. then they know that you care.
So would you advise actually asking some questions about their thoughts and their beliefs about themselves as a man, and are they meeting those expectations and those standards? And if not, how is that impacting them? Would you encourage physicians or providers?
No, I think that's a great point. There is actually one of these events that I mentioned. There was actually a blank mask, an exercise they had, a blank mask on the table, and the man would write on the outside of the mask how they believe the world perceived them. And then on the inside of the mask, they would write how they perceive themselves. Mm-hmm. So I think that exercise is beneficial. It increases your awareness. And I think from a healthcare provider standpoint, it lets you see the heart of the person that you're working with, right? And try to understand how do they perceive themselves in a world that may see them a certain way, right? And I think that's a very awesome exercise to actually do in practice.
All right. Well, you know what? Of course, this has been a fantastic conversation. And so I think hugely beneficial to many folks in many different aspects of men's lives. So if someone were interested in working with you, whether it's a wellness coach or an executive coach and the other work that you're doing, how do they go about connecting with you?
Absolutely. Yes. So you can find me online at drjimmyhenry.com, drjimmyhenry.com. You can connect with me on LinkedIn or Instagram. My handle is at Dr. spelled out WellFit. And I would be, actually very excited to help men along this journey of becoming the best versions of themselves.
So again, Dr. Jimmy, thank you so much for appearing with me today and having this conversation, offering such a tremendous amount of information and wisdom about, you know, the connection between manhood and masculinity and how that impacts health and how do we change that so that we get better health and better wellness for men.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. And man, we don't have to wear the mask any longer. So thanks for having me.
I'm your host, Dr. Balan A. Durr, awakening and empowering you to live out your infinite potential, to live life in the sweet spot. I'll see you next week. Thank you for joining us today in the sweet spot. Share, follow, and like us on social media. To learn more, please visit BalinADurrMD.com, spelled BalinADurrMD.com. Join us next week, and remember, when you heal your mind, all things are possible.